Welcome, people, and thank you for tuning in. This is the Sports Underground Podcast with Baron Graff.
And look who's coming up.
Only last week, I murdered a rock. Angela Stone hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
So let's do what we do tonight.
And now, from the Hotbox Studio in Los Angeles, which is literally an 8x10 box in Baron's garage, here's your host, Baron Graff.
Happening, folks. It's the Sports Underground. I'm your host, Baron Graft, again from Bedrock Studios. I got bad news, guys. We're going to have to flip the intro package. We're going to have to change everything because it looks like this is going to be a regular deal. I am in studio again with the often imitated but never duplicated Riley Kohler. Ryko, what's happening, man?
Yeah, nothing much. Just sitting here doing technical stuff.
Nice. See, that's cool because that means I'm not doing technical stuff, which means I can think way more about sports stuff. Speaking of which, we're going to talk Alex Smith to the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to talk about the NFL draft and teams asking players if they like girls. What? We're going to talk about the World Baseball Classic. We're going to talk about college basketball. But before I can get to any of that, have you been paying attention to the NBA? Have you been on board? Because in case you didn't notice, Steph Curry's kind of had a big week. Most notably, Wednesday night at the Garden against the Knicks.
Curry with the quick trigger. Got the three ball. You know, he does shoot 45% from downtown. Curry with the quick three right down Main Street on Prigioni.
He's heating up.
Curry for the lead. Got it. Steph Curry, smooth. He scored the last 15 in a row for Golden State.
He's on fire.
Curry, boy, sweet touch.
Come on.
He had 38 last night, and the way the meter's running right now, he might equal that. For three. Got it. What a night for Steph Curry.
What a night indeed. Steph Curry went off, went ham in the Garden, 54 points. Just put up a half a century against the Knicks in like baseball, basketball mecca. I mean, look, there's not a bigger stage in anywhere, any basketball than Madison Square Garden. And he just went out there and turn the Knicks into bacon. He just burn them up. And it's interesting because he's had an eventful week. Tuesday night, the Warriors played against the Indiana Pacers. They had a brawl. They got into it, and Steph Curry went after Roy Hibbert. Now, if these are just names for you, I'm going to try to put this into perspective. Roy Hibbert, 7-foot center, probably close to 300 pounds if he's not 300 pounds. Went to Georgetown, very intimidating individual. We'll put it that way. Steph Curry, not that. Steph Curry's like almost 6 feet, maybe if he stands on his tiptoes. He's probably 185, 190-ish. He got right into the scrum, and it was he got thrown around like a rag doll on Tuesday night, mixing it up. And then the very next night goes into the Garden and puts up a 50 spot. How you like me now, Steph Curry's saying. What's up with it? So he's just been going bananas. I talked a little bit before the All-Star break. I talked about the Lakers. And then coming out of the break, I told you I saw that game against Boston. The Lakers on a roll. They've won now 4 out of 5 games, you know, This show is being recorded while they're still playing, but they're up by 20 in the fourth quarter. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that they've got that one put away. The Lakers, man, they've won 4 out of 5. It's very interesting.
You know, good start. It's a good start.
It's a great start.
Yeah, it's the first win.
Yeah, it's the first couple of wins. It's good to do, but look, they're going to have to do a little bit more. And they've got some big games coming up. They've got a good stretch of games here. They're going to play the Hornets, which is, you know, pretty much an easy game. I mean, let's not disparage the Hornets too much, but look.
That's a winner!
Yeah, you can bet on that. I mean, it's just not going to be... If they lose to the Hornets, they got no business hoping for the postseason. I'll say that. But then the next night, they go and play the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough. Not going to lie, Oklahoma City, probably the odds-on favorite, for me at least, to win the NBA Western Conference this year. And this is a tough game. I mean, you can't like your chances if you're the Lakers in this game. Even though you're the home team, you've got the Hawks on the third, then you got the Thunder, then the Hornets, then the... So look, I mean, the Hawks are a tough team, the Thunder are a tough team, but if you get past them, you could go on a run if you're the Lakers. I mean, you really could.
We're streaking! We're streaking!
You might be. That could happen. That's exactly what it sounds like every time the Lakers win three games now. People just lose their mind. So that's an interesting thing going on there in the NBA. Got to keep an eye on the Lakers. A lot of news going on right now in the NFL, though, with the NFL draft right around the corner. They just wrapped up the combine. We already talked about Manti Te'o at the combine. But some interesting news that came out immediately following the combine. A couple of college players were interviewed and then re-interviewed and then re-examined. And it just got ridiculous quick. But what happened was in their interviews with a couple of teams that are heretofore unnamed, these players were asked specific questions about their sexuality. Specifically, do you like girls? There's one player who was being interviewed, and they asked him, "Oh, do you have a wife? Do you have kids? No, no. Do you have a girlfriend? No. Do you like girls?" And you know, the player laughed it off. "Yes, I like girls." And there's a huge uproar about this right now. Everybody's talking about this, and rightfully so. I mean, this is a very big issue in the largest American sport. And I've been pretty vocal about this. I've always kind of come from the position and still hold the opinion of, if the guy can play football, who cares what he does otherwise? I mean, seriously, at this point, does it really matter? I mean, can't we say we're at this point as a society already? I think we can. And a lot of people are outraged that teams would be asking these questions. And I would be outraged, too, if I thought they were doing it from a perspective of exclusion. If they're asking those questions because they don't want a homosexual player in their locker room because it's a perceived distraction, then I have a problem with that. But I'm going to give you something. I'm going to put this down, and I don't think people have really thought about this too much. Is it possible? Is it maybe just a possibility that NFL teams are asking these questions specifically of collegiate players coming into the league because they are looking for a player that is openly homosexual and would support that player as an organization if he were to come out of the closet while playing in the NFL? Now, think this all the way through, because this is roughly the equivalent, and I don't want to offend anybody, but this is roughly the equivalent of Branch Rickey drafting Jackie Robinson into the Dodgers minor league organization with the intention of putting him on a Major League Baseball roster and desegregating baseball. In our era, the rights of lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender peoples, that is the civil war fight, the civil rights battle that's on hand right now. The fight for equality, the fight for rights, this is the civil rights battle of this generation. It's not to say that, you know, hey, everything's hunky-dory with racial tension. That's not what I'm saying. And I'm not in any way suggesting that we're all the way over the hump with women's rights even. But in contrast, looking at the rights that the homosexual population has right now, There's a stark contrast. We'll just put it that way. And my only point is, I think that it could be NFL teams are looking for that player. Remember, the Baltimore Ravens already had a linebacker, Brendan Iambadejo, my favorite NFL football player, you might remember now, who openly said that, you know, he didn't care and that he would support a teammate if that teammate were homosexual. And I think that that's, a very demonstrative statement coming from an NFL player. This is, after all, the biggest sport, the most widely watched and followed sport. It's the quote-unquote most manly sport. And there is definitely, as we saw in the Super Bowl the week leading up to it, some comments made by players on the San Francisco 49ers, there's still definitely a lot of apprehension and prejudice around this issue. But I think what's actually happening is I think that there are teams that are out there looking for that specific player. And this, it made me go back and look at Branch Rickey, because Branch Rickey, the legendary general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, it's not like this guy walked out and went, wow, Jackie Robinson, what a great baseball player. Who cares what color his skin is? Let's sign him up. He's going to make us win. Branch Rickey specifically went through and scouted Negro League teams and looked for players that he felt, not only from a talent perspective, but from a character perspective, would be able to handle the rigors that he knew were going to come with the onus of desegregating the game of baseball. And he specifically, when he spoke to Jackie Robinson about the matter, he was specific with him about the fact that he didn't need a man who couldn't stand up for himself when, you know, racial slurs were being thrown at him, when he was being verbally and physically attacked, that he needed a man of a greater character that could turn the other cheek, as it were, or that could have the dignity to not react in those situations. Branch Rickey knew what he was doing. That's the only reason that it worked when it did. If Jackie Robinson, and it's sad, but if Jackie Robinson had reacted any other way except for the way that he did, it would have been a setback. Within a matter of years, you saw segregation occurring widely across the sport of baseball. I think the same thing is happening in the NFL. I really do. I think that these teams are looking for that player that has the right mix of talent and character that they can say to him, hey, if this is what's going on, if this is where you're at, we will support you as an organization. Here's why. From a PR perspective, this puts your team in a different stratosphere for the rest of time. Invariably, if you talk about the Dodgers organization, if I were to sit down and say to anybody, tell me the history of the Los Angeles Dodgers, at some point in time in telling that story, they would have to come to the point that the Los Angeles Dodgers were the first team with a black player on their roster in Major League Baseball. They were the first team. And I would argue that the organization as a whole has been viewed in a different light ever since that occurred. They've been viewed as a more accepting organization. Certainly in the African American community, for many years that was the case. And I think that any team in the NFL that were to come out and support a player in this way would also have that same legacy going forward. Hey, this is the first team that openly supported a homosexual player and said, we don't care what you do off the field. All we care about is what's happening in between the lines.
Do you think that's possible nowadays? When it's so easy to see how these players are being picked out, do you think, you know, if Jackie Robinson was picked and everybody knew the circumstances around how he was picked, like how he was groomed for the role, do you think it would have worked as well? And do you think it can be done today?
I think that nobody knew what was going on with Jackie Robinson. I don't think that the way that he was treated would have been any different. I think that given the racial tension, the racial stereotypes that existed especially in the game of baseball. Remember, in the 40s, when Jackie Robinson integrated baseball, baseball was the biggest thing in America. There was no bigger sport on the national stage than baseball. Baseball in the 40s was the equivalent of the NFL in our generation today. And so they were definitely on the front when it came to, hey, if this is going to happen, you know, that was a significant step forward for the civil rights movement. And so I think that one, Branch Rickey kept it very quiet what he was doing. Certainly his conversations with Robinson never were made public until well after this all occurred. I don't know that it would have affected the outcome of it at all, but certainly Branch Rickey felt that it would have. So for whatever that's worth, I think there was a reason he did it the way that he did. Translating that into today's society, I don't think that in the world that we live in with 24-hour news coverage where sports has literally become something that's covered from stem to stern nonstop, I don't see it as something that's going to be able to be kept quiet on any kind of long-term basis. I don't see how that's going to work when you've got players with Twitter, players with Facebook, and everybody's watching. Everybody's got a cell phone video camera. And I honestly think that's why they're asking these players these questions at the NFL Combine before they've ever made it to the league, is because they want to know way ahead. They want to know before they're ever even tied to this player. Whether that's for good reasons or for bad reasons, that's purely speculative. My only point here is that, hey, maybe it's possible that they are looking at this. I'm just throwing a different perspective out there. Maybe they're looking at this for a different reason than to say, stay out, we don't want you. Maybe they are searching for that player. Another team searching for a player was the Kansas City Chiefs. They did not have a quarterback to speak of. It was ugly in Kansas City. And when you've got a head coach like Andy Reid, he likes to chuck the rock. He likes to throw the ball around. No secret there. And so when you've got that and you don't have a quarterback, that's kind of a problem. And in evaluating the draft, even though the Chiefs have a very high position in the draft, I don't think that there's any player in the NFL draft this year at quarterback that's able to come in, even the high-profile guys, even, you know, the Geno Smiths, even the Matt Barkleys, these guys, I don't perceive these as guys that are going to be able to come in and make an immediate impact. And so if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you're looking at this and going, we got to get somebody. There's no way the Andy Reid offense works without a signal caller. I mean, you can't just take some geek off the streets and hand him the rock and be like, here we go, we're running Andy Reid's offense. It doesn't work that way. And so the Chiefs made a move, and they traded the 34th overall pick and a conditional pick in exchange for 49ers backup and former starter Alex Smith. And a lot of people are saying, oh, the Chiefs overpaid for this pick. Alex Smith has only had a few good years. There's all kinds of different opinions out there about what's going on with this. And I find it particularly interesting that anybody could think that the Chiefs overpaid for Alex Smith. And I'm going to get into it after we take a quick break. I think the Chiefs are a big winner in this trade. I think that they come out on the upper hand on this. For only giving up two draft picks, it's remarkable. I'm going to tell you why. If you're a Chiefs fan, you're going to want to pay attention, because I'm going to give you all the ammunition you're going to need for anybody who's going to criticize this pick right after the break.
Tonight, I'm going to have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'll turn.
shooting star, leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car, passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say there. Just don't know how to react to that. That was good. I threatened you, Ryko. If you're going to start this, you might not want to go this route with me. I heard Caribbean Queen today, and I almost ambushed you with it.
I said you were close. I didn't say in what way.
I was this close to ambushing you with Caribbean Queen. Let me tell you something. if you live in LA, you'll understand this, but when you find yourself sitting in traffic for hours, you just don't really care what the people around you think anymore. Is that just me? I just stopped caring. I'm like, who? You're all just faceless. You all just look like children in Pink Floyd videos to me. You're not even faces. You're just random slabs of meat in cars next to me. And so I'm sitting in my car this afternoon, and I am literally, I'm geeking out pretty hard on Caribbean Queen. I'm not going to lie. I really got after Caribbean Queen in my car. And I look over to my right, and in an SUV, there is a, we'll call her an Asian woman. She might have been from the Caribbean. I don't really know. Given the look on her face, it's a distinct possibility. She was mortified, and all I could do was laugh and keep singing. I don't know. It happens sometimes. This is how it goes down. So Alex Smith, here's a segue for you. Alex Smith to the Chiefs. There you go. Caribbean Queen to the Chiefs somehow. But listen, everybody's saying like, oh, Alex Smith, he got benched, this, that, and the other. I'm not sure that this is a great trade for San Francisco. Everybody seems to think San Francisco did great in this trade by getting two draft picks. And I mean, look, they're loaded in this draft class. They've got a ton of picks. I'm just not sure that for Alex Smith, I mean, look at Alex Smith under John Harbaugh. He's been, I would argue, an exceptional quarterback. He's certainly managed the games he's played in well. I wouldn't say that he's cost them any games. I would say that he won them a couple of games that they shouldn't have won. I would say that he excelled. And before anybody gets too excited about this and starts coming at me with all the stats of what Colin Kaepernick did, I'd like to point something out. Colin Kaepernick only played a handful of games, and the NFL is a reactionary league. Ask Cam Newton. Anybody can be great for a while. But what they do to you in the NFL, and you see it over and over again, this is why quarterbacks have the sophomore slump in the NFL. Anybody can be great in the NFL for a season given a specific baseline amount of talent. Ask Mark Sanchez. You remember Mark Sanchez came into the league and he blew it up with the New York Jets in his first year in the league. Blew it up, took him to the playoffs. The stock for Mark Sanchez could not have been higher. Now, the Jets are going to invite 5 quarterbacks to their camp this year. His stock has fallen meteorically. Because what happens to quarterbacks specifically in the NFL? They take away what you do best. What do you do best? We're going to take that away. Now can you beat us? And let's tell the truth. In the Super Bowl, the Baltimore Ravens, with an aging, little bit slow of foot defense, took away what Colin Kaepernick does best. They said, you're not going to beat us with your legs at all. We are going to make you beat us as a passer. And he could not do it. Now, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to that young man next year. And he might be great. He might not follow the mold. All I'm saying is that's awful quick to pull a trigger like this. That's awful quick to mortgage your future and put it all on one guy's shoulders. Kansas City, on the other hand, has absolutely nothing to lose in this deal. I mean, they were the worst team in football last year. Absolutely the worst. They fire their GM. They fire their head coach. They bring in Andy Reid. They give him all say over all decisions football. And the first thing you got to do if you're Andy Reid is you got to get a quarterback. Here's why I think Alex Smith is a perfect quarterback for Andy Reid. I'm going to give you a little bit of history. This is just a history lesson. I'm not just going to tell you, hey, this is a match made in heaven, which is what everybody will tell you. Here's why this is a match made in heaven. Alex Smith has not only played well, he has played exceptionally well in his career as a quarterback under systems that are run by guys who run a West Coast offense or the spread offense. Let's take you all the way back to college. You remember college, where Alex Smith played at Utah. Do you remember who coached that Utah team? Oh yeah, it was this wild maverick named Urban Meyer. And he was doing this crazy thing in the mid-2000s called the spread offense that nobody knew how to defend. And Utah, with Smith as the quarterback and Meyer as the head coach, went undefeated. They were the first non-power conference team in bowl championship series history to go undefeated and challenge for the national title. They were the first team to cause a problem in the system. Now, since then, we've seen Boise State, we've seen TCU, we've seen a handful of other teams do the same thing. Utah was the first one. They did it by outsmarting the teams that they were playing. They weren't just beating Mountain West knockoffs. They were beating everybody that they played, and handily. And if you look at Urban Meyer's spread offense, it was essentially based in the same concepts of the Bill Walsh West Coast offense, in that it uses the pass in place of the run. Instead of running a sweep, you run a bubble screen or a swing pass, or you're hitting a running back out of the backfield. You're throwing a lateral or a behind the line of scrimmage pass. You're turning the pass into a long handoff. That's the West Coast offense, folks. That's all it is. It's not about Don Coryell and Air Coryell and spread the field and go vertical. It's got elements of that, but it's more about beating you from different angles on the field, and you never know where the ball is going. You never know who's going to attack you. It requires a couple of things. It requires a very cerebral quarterback. It requires a quarterback that can read a defense and can react to what's on the field and what's in front of him and change on the fly. That's important. Every successful West Coast quarterback does this. It also requires a very accurate, although not a strong passer, an accurate passer. Well, guess what that is? That's Alex Smith. Cerebral guy. You're talking about a guy who got a degree in college by his sophomore year. He comes to the NFL. He's drafted first overall by Mike Nolan in the San Francisco 49ers organization. Mike Nolan, very knowledgeable football man. It's a popular pick to take Alex Smith number one overall. Promptly struggles under Mike Nolan. Well, why? Mike Nolan doesn't run a West Coast offense, folks. Mike Nolan fought with Alex Smith the entire time they were there. Then, suddenly, they bring in John Harbaugh after a couple of years of Mike Singletary's disaster. Also not West Coast offense, by the way. They bring in Jim Harbaugh. What's Jim Harbaugh run? The West Coast offense. And all of a sudden, Alex Smith looks great again. Do you really think this is a coincidence? Or is it possible that he really fits this system well? That this is where he excels? Let's take it the other direction. Look at Andy Reid. You know where Andy Reid came from? Andy Reid came from the Mike Holmgren coaching tree. You know who Mike Holmgren came from? You got it, Bill Walsh. West Coast offense. So listen, this is peanut butter and chocolate, guys. You got Andy Reid, who is a West Coast offense disciple, who in his career has made every single quarterback that has played for him look significantly better than they actually are. Ask Arizona and Kevin Kolb. Ask Ty Detmer. Ask Donovan McNabb. You can literally go down the list. AJ Feely. You can name every quarterback that's ever played for Andy Reid. They never played as well away from the Eagles and Andy Reid as they did with him. That's not an accident. Now, you give me Jamaal Charles in Kansas City, dominant running back. That doesn't hurt the West Coast offense. Sets up play action, Very good deal there. You give me Dwayne Bowe, strong receiver. I like that too. Things are starting to come together. Things don't look that bad. I think the biggest threat for Kansas City this year is going to be keeping Andy Reid away from the barbecue joints. I think that's going to be a big problem. He's a hefty man. He likes to eat. We'll see what happens there. So there's your Alex Smith breakdown. Lots to look forward to, Chiefs fans. I don't know. I think if I'm a Charger fan today, I'm very concerned. I really do. I think that if I'm a Chargers fan, I think definitely if I'm a Raiders fan, I'm concerned. I'm not sure they're ready to compete with the Broncos, but this is the step in the right direction, that's for sure. Let's see what they do in the draft, and then we'll talk some more. Moving forward, you know, last show we talked about college basketball, and my take then was, hey, look at all these teams in college basketball. They are all essentially the same team in that they are equally talented. All of them has just as good a chance of winning as they do of losing. Well, here we go. Let's run down the AP top five. Indiana, number one, lost to who? Oh, Minnesota. Yeah, they're not a team you're going to ever hear about again. Oh, Gonzaga hasn't played yet, but watch out. Number three, Duke. Oh, they lost to Virginia. Yeah, that's going to happen. Michigan. Oh, yeah, they lost to who? Penn State. Penn State barely has a football program anymore. I didn't even know they had a basketball team. Apparently, Michigan forgot too. They lost. Miami, they won. They're going to move up. Kansas won at 6. Georgetown won at 7. Florida lost. At Tennessee, lost. Bad deal. Bad deal. Michigan State lost last. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, these are your top 10 teams in the last 2 weeks of the season. This is not supposed to be happening. These teams aren't supposed to be going backwards. These teams are supposed to be fighting to move forward in this. It's just, I'm telling you, there's no clear-cut favorite in college basketball this year. It's just good luck filling out your bracket. This is going to be the year, I'm telling you right now, this is going to be the year that you might as well have your daughter in kindergarten fill out your bracket based on which team's colors she likes the best. The girl in the office that picks the teams based on the mascot is going to kick your ass on the bracket this year. I promise you she is, because you're going to overthink this like I always do. And you're going to, you know, take into account road RPI in night games coming off a long weekend. And you're going to use that as criteria. And there's going to be some girl in accounting, and she doesn't even know why she's doing this. She's just having fun, and she has a cousin that went to Loyola Marymount, and she's going to kick your ass because she's not going to overthink this, and it's going to be a total crapshoot, guys. Total crapshoot this year. That's all I'm saying. College basketball is a total and complete mess. Should be wildly entertaining. I like for a lot of upsets this year. I really do, because I think everybody's on basically equal footing. Something I'm kind of upset about that I'm not really at all stoked for. You guys know the World Baseball Classic is this year? This is such a bummer for me.
You don't have to hit my microphone.
I didn't mean to. It's just every time I say it, it's just like somebody rips the neck muscles out of the back of my head. It's just like my head just, oh, God. World Baseball Classic. Oh, how ridiculous is this? Let me tell you. So Russell Martin is Canadian. I knew I didn't like that guy for a reason. Russell Martin is Canadian, so he's supposed to play for the Canadian team. He said to Canada, I think I'd like to play shortstop. Can I play shortstop? Like, hey, Russ, you're a catcher. Yeah, you're a backstop. And you want to play shortstop? And he's like, shortstop or I'm not playing. Russell Martin withdrew from the Canadian national team in the World Baseball Classic because they wouldn't let him play shortstop. I mean, if you're taking this thing seriously, you are really starved for national pride in the game of baseball. Going back to the legacy and talking about the history of baseball, this event has always and will always strike me as a real stretch. I've always looked at this and thought Bud Selig's trying real, real hard to make this an event. And look, I mean, baseball is difficult to watch. You have to be a fan of the game of baseball to really follow the game of baseball. To the point that most people can get emotionally invested in like one team, maybe two teams if you're from a large metropolitan area like LA. New York, maybe you can get invested in a couple of teams. Maybe if you're a transplant, you can, you know, root for your hometown, root for the Red Sox, but, you know, you move to Cincinnati, so you pull for the Reds too. I could see maybe two teams. But look, nobody cares. Once your team is out of it, and the numbers show this, right? The ratings show this. Once your team is out of it, people stop watching. If you look at regional statistics and viewership in Major League Baseball, except for the real diehard cities like St. Louis, like your real great baseball towns, New York, you know, except for these like real stalwart baseball cities, nobody watches after their teams are eliminated. So in looking at the World Baseball Classic, now you're saying to me, okay, we want you to pull for the United States. Well, first of all, let's just say it like it is. 30 years ago, 90% of the players would have played for Team USA. Now it's starkly different. Like, I didn't know Russell Martin was Canadian. Russell Martin's Canadian? Who knew that? News to everyone, right? Well, he doesn't play for Team USA. I could not tell you who's going to start for Team USA. I have no idea. Justin Verlander, I'm going to guess. Justin Verlander? I have no idea. And my point is, like, you might know some names, but you can't really get cohesion in knowing a full team. So, look, maybe the people in the Dominican Republic are really stoked for this event. Maybe the people in Panama are really jazzed for the World Baseball Classic. That could be. The problem is, the majority of the television audience for the sport of baseball still resides in the United States. And as far as I can tell, nobody really gives a damn about the World Baseball Classic. I think people are way more interested in what's going on in spring training. I think that that's got some real appeal just from the perspective of who's going where, who's doing what. I've been following my team intermittently in the spring. I've been kind of paying attention. I think we're going to have a rough year. I'm a Cardinal fan. I think we're going to have a rough year. Some very interesting stuff happening in the Los Angeles Dodgers organization this spring. I think that the Dodgers are a very interesting story. The Dodgers are the first team to have a payroll that exceeds the Yankees in something like a dozen years. I mean, it's really remarkable that the Yankees have been the highest spending team in baseball for that long. It's also remarkable that a team managed to outspend the Yankees. And in looking at this roster, going down that roster, I mean, they have got every single piece, every single player you could want, whatever you want to talk about, they have it. And it's tough because, look, they're taking eight starting pitchers into camp. Eight guys that could be in that rotation. And so you look at that and you go, okay, well, who's it going to be? And so they've got interesting decisions to make on that roster. Those guys are all going to end up somewhere, right? Those guys that fall off, those are guys that are going to get traded. Those guys are going to, you know, wind up someplace else. But I said it last year at the trade deadline when they made this huge move with the Red Sox. And everybody at that time was saying, oh, they're going to compete this year. They're going to win. I said, slow down. It takes time. These guys have to gel. It's not going to work. It's got a real shot at working this year. And give the Dodgers credit. They went all in. They looked at what the Giants were doing up the coast. And they said, we got to go all in for the arms. They went and got Zach Greinke. They got Josh Beckett. They still have Clayton Kershaw. Any one of those guys have all won the Cy Young. That's impressive. This could be one of those pitching staffs that rivals the greatest of the ages.
So that's it. That's the show. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Hey, hit me up. Hit me on Facebook. You got the Sports Underground page on Facebook. Hit me up on Twitter at BGraft. Let me know. What are you watching this weekend? What are you into? Let me know how you like the show. Let me know what you want to hear, what you want to talk about. I'm down. That's the show. Whatever you guys do, do me one thing. Keep right.
You have been listening to the Sports Underground Podcast, and you know we always welcome your take. You can find the Sports Underground on Facebook, so go ahead and like it. If you want to download, hit us up on iTunes. And remember, come back again next time and get some.